None of the events that have made the second Henry Tudor the most famous king in history happened in 1534. Henry VIII divorced no one that year, married no one, killed no eminent person. But the year was a milestone all the same, arguably the great turning point in his stunningly eventful career. When it began, he had deteriorated only enough to be the sort of person you would hate to be seated next to at a dinner party. Arrogant, opinionated, a bully inclined to self-pity, invincibly confident of his own charm, and certain that he knew best about everything that mattered. Before the year ended, he had become what he would remain for the rest of his life, a full-fledged tyrant in the strictest sense of the word. A homicidal monster, absurd, pathetic, mortally dangerous. A person in Henry's predicament, a man whose pride has walled him up in such impregnable isolation, becomes incapable of an emotion as healthy as gratitude. Certainly he cannot see himself as merely lucky. His fate, he thinks, is coterminous with divine will. Everything good that befalls him does so in fulfillment of God's great plan for the universe. Every disappointment can be traced neither to God nor to some failure on his own part. That is impossible. He could never commit a serious error. But to something outside himself that is cosmically out of joint. Nonetheless, lucky is what Henry was. One of the luckiest human beings who ever lived. Much of his good fortune he owed to his father. In the quarter century between his victory at Bosworth and his death in 1509, Henry VII had made the English crown more secure and powerful than it had been in generations. He had filled the royal treasury with gold and accustomed his subjects to the benefits of peace. He is today a remote and elusive figure, a king about whom most people know almost nothing, and he appears to have been much the same in his own time. Though his life before Bosworth had been studded with moments of high drama and hair's-breadth escapes, little of the excitement had been of his choosing. Mainly his early years had been spent waiting. Even what we know of his part in the fight that won him the crown suggests that it could have been played by a deaf-mute, a mannequin. Henry was attacked. Henry was defended. Henry was crowned. Every episode finds him in a passive role. And yet something tremendous was achieved, and the achievement was Henry's. None of it would have been possible if, even in his youth, there had not been something about him, something not quite explainable at a distance of 5 centuries, that won the support and even the affection of the Duke of Brittany, the ruling family of France, and one after another of the older, more experienced men who had fled England after Richard III became king. Nor could he have succeeded if, whenever enemies appeared to be closing in on him, he had not had the courage and resourcefulness to outwit them. However colourless he may seem to us, however much the contemporary chronicles fail to make him a fully three-dimensional figure, the one thing that always comes through is his unfailing competence. In temperament, he appears to be more like a modern corporate executive of remarkably high caliber, coolly savvy, demanding but amiable enough, a good judge of risk and reward, than some swashbuckling medieval warrior king. He always had himself firmly under control, and he seems always to have been somewhat inscrutable. He took the one great chance that fate offered him, pulled it off, and devoted the rest of his life to the careful consolidation of his winnings. He was disdainful of military glory, and though he sought and won the respect of the continent's ruling families, he displayed no wish to cut a particularly great figure among them. If he left almost no mark on the world's imagination, biographers have taken little interest in him, perhaps in part because they could never be confident of understanding him. His reign is important all the same. It built the stage upon which his son and then his granddaughter would be able to show themselves off for almost the whole of the century that followed his death. The most impressive thing Henry did after reaching the throne was to establish himself securely on it. This was no small achievement, To grasp its magnitude, it is necessary to remember the 100 years before Bosworth, with their tragic succession of Plantagenet kings and claimants clashing and killing and being killed. Henry, his dollop of royal blood inherited from a bastard line that even when legitimized had been excluded by law from succession to the crown, could not have been given good chances of lasting long when he became king. But step by slow step, in his methodical and undramatic way, he made it clear to England and the world that he was a real king and a strong one, and not to be taken lightly. He did so carefully, confiding in only his oldest friends, never moving so fast as to provoke reaction, watching for opportunities to eliminate rivals, and seizing those opportunities as they arose.